What do you think about love? Come on.
Okay, Lord.
Yo, he's about to give us a dissertation. The way he said that. Go ahead. Break it down. Break it down.
Love is just a feeling. You like somebody and you want to fall in love with them.
Okay.
You just hope they feel the same way like you do towards them.
Okay.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode 128 of Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine. If you're a new listener, welcome. And if you're an experienced listener, welcome back. I am Lady Buddha, and joining me are Miss Think Pretty Smart and Sojourner Verdad. And together we discuss everything from current events, relationships, education, politics, and entertainment, all with a feminine twist. Welcome to February, ladies. How are y'all doing? What y'all drinking?
I am drinking the finest non-Flint water.
You know what? You just jumped from how you feeling to like, oh, I'm over here drunk.
Wow.
No, I'm not at all. I mean, every day, every time I drink, I take a sip, I get pissed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
How you doing, though? How's the weather?
So the weather here is much better. Everything is melting. Basically, tomorrow it's going to be like 63 degrees with rain.
Wow.
So I'm leaving work Friday because I assume I'm going to have the flu.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Other than that, that's it.
All right. What about you, Sojo?
I'm tired. I don't know. It's like I have this fatigue right now. January is like a super busy month, and then, of course, y'all know I'm started medication. So I'm kind of wondering if that's also draining me, but I am just sipping on water right now. I actually did have, y'all know I haven't really had like beverages for a minute, so I had some wine last night. I think it was like one glass. I think I WhatsApped y'all that I was drunk or tipsy or something.
You remember the rest of the stuff you WhatsApped?
No, because the next thing I knew, it was 4:30 in the morning and I was waking up for my day. So.
You did say you were drunk from one glass, and those of us who know that you actually do drink moonshine, we know that something must be going on with your metabolism right now.
But you know, I haven't had like hard stuff in a minute. Well, no, I take that back, because then I have that Tito's vodka.
And you were drunk then too.
I know. So, listen. The last couple of weeks, I've had things to drink that I have not been able to handle. So that's. But yeah, anyway.
God telling you to sober up, slow it down.
Go back to my water with lemon.
I know, infused water. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm just drinking water. And I got some sangria. We'll see how it goes. I also started a medication recently, and it's a diuretic that's really been kind of pushing me over the edge. So I have to drink water very aggressively. and so, just to not feel poorly, honestly. So I've still been able to run and things of that nature, but it definitely takes some intention to stay hydrated to be okay.
Didn't you say you lost your taste for sweet stuff? So like sangria?
Well, yeah, I did. I felt like it was completely gone for a while. I can tolerate sweet stuff now, but I don't have the craving for it as much. More, I want sweet stuff when I want some carbs now, more so than I just got a sweet tooth. So it's not the sugar that's driving it, not the sugary taste, I should say.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. So we'll see. I'm definitely, it's easier to kind of say, do I really want ice cream right now? No.
I'm laughing at you talking about that you have to drink water aggressively. You remember was it the water strike or the vegetable strike that I went on? I can't remember whatever it was, but you were like making me, I think it was water.
I do not know what you're talking about
This was in the early days of Twitter when I first got on Twitter. And you were like eating kale and drinking water and hydrating and, whatever. And I was like, fuck water. And you were like, You were like, water check? I mean, you were like bullying me into water. So now that's all
I'm
drinking.
Definitely see myself saying water check and not kale or spinach check. So.
No, that was no. You were, no, that's when you had those red smoothies when you were trying to convince everybody that adding beets to smoothies was like the cool thing to do.
Listen, everybody.
It never happened.
Hot pink smoothies are goodness. So if you don't know what a hot pink smoothie is, go look it up. It involves cashews and carrots and coconut water, bananas.
And if that doesn't sound vomit-inducing enough.
It's not. It's sweet. It's yummy. So those of you who have a sweet tooth and want to try a new smoothie, a breakfast smoothie, it's a hot pink smoothie, go Google it and get your life.
Okay? Sounds like a trip to the toilet stool.
Well, it is. It keeps you moving. And isn't that what you want in life?
Aggressively.
Right. No. No, well, beets keep you moving anyway. Anyway, so, all right. So, before we get into tonight's topic, which is not hot pink smoothies or...
moving aggressively.
Let's get into some listener feedback. Remember, we love 5-star reviews and thumbs up. And if you leave us one and write us a love note, we'll read it on the air. And you can do that on iTunes or Stitcher. You can tweet us at Whiskey Wine Moon. You can hit us up on Facebook or drop us a note at feedback@whiskeywinemoon.com. So I think we have a couple of pieces of feedback. Sojo, will you give us the good word?
Sure. I'll start with the iTunes 5-star review first. The right. title is Three Queens Blessing the Airwaves from Mr. Bizu. And it says, come for the Mary Jane tea, stay for the thoughtful analysis on events and pointers on how to walk in your truth. These ladies continue to break the mold and raise the bar in podcasting. Highly recommended listening for anyone and everyone. Woohoo! Oh, I didn't download sound effects. Woohoo!
I was thinking we needed to clap for that one. That's pretty nice.
That was a good one. Thank you, Mr. Bizu. And we also, I started like tweeting some of our 5-star reviews out. So I tweeted that one the other day. So thank you for that.
I knew it sounded familiar. Okay.
And that's then awesome. We have a listener letter from Trojan Scooter. And our, I don't know if you said it, our email address is feedback@whiskeywineandmoonshine.com. So you guys can drop us a line. The title of his email is Thank You and American Crime. It says, hey, ladies, hope you are doing well. I am sending this email to say thank you for the quality content you provide. It's deeply appreciated. I would also like to hear your thoughts on this season of American Crime. I love how the writers have decided to tackle multiple nuanced issues such as teen sexuality, private versus public education, and race and class. The thing I'm enjoying the most is the LaCroix family. What are you enjoying this season on American Crime? Keep up the good work, Trojan. So, Buddha, you're not watching, are you?
I was going to say, you know I don't watch that much TV, so I don't even know what he's talking about. So y'all got to tell me what that is.
Smart, have you kept up with it?
Yeah, I've kept up. It's a television show, obviously, about an incident that happens at a party with some teenagers. One of the teenagers is, well, it's a basketball party, and one of the teenagers is, well, two, they're co-captains, but one of them is 18 and black, so when the shit goes down, his name ends up being the one that gets besmirched, but his parents are some muckety-mucks, his mom being Regina King, and his dad being Andre 3000.
Woohoo! I'm sorry.
the person who is the quote-unquote victim goes against what we typically see. It is a male victim. Mm-hmm. And where we are right now, and the spoilers are about to come, so those of you guys who are watching and haven't caught up, fast forward. it's just come out that, you know, one of the boys who was there is actually gay, and it's possible that that was a hookup gone quote-unquote wrong as opposed to an all-out rape. And the boy who is the victim, he's actually a scholarship student with a girlfriend at a less than prestigious school, and so there's, you know, they're showing you what's going on at his old high school and him wanting to go back. He's actually back there, I think, now. And on top of all that, Sojo, do you want to talk about his mom?
Well, first let me say, Buddha, just so you can catch up on what American Crime is every season it looks like they're using most of the same characters to tell a different story. Hmm. So this year is the one with the schools. It's kind of like American Horror Story, but this year is the one with the schools. And
it's
I...
Well written. Mm-hmm. I said, except well written. Well, I couldn't get season one. But.
No, that's what I was just about to say. I did not like season one. I may have watched maybe four episodes, and then I just forgot it came on and just let it go. But when I saw that Andre 3000 was going to be a character, I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, I'm tuning in. And I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with it. No matter what. But
Calm down, God, Darl.
Put your vagina away.
I was just thinking that, baboon butt. Calm it down. Wow.
I'm sorry. He just sounds like home. But anyway, back to
apparently.
The show. Shut up. see, now I lost my train of thought. Anyway, they had.
Andre has it.
Hello. They had me at hello with this episode, I mean with this series, because first of all, of course, it's in the school, so seeing how the school handles the entire situation, and they have the guidance counselors talking, and they have like different almost monologues going on throughout the all of the scenes, it instantly captured my attention. But then the thing that I liked as well was the fact that it was a flip of the script on your typical rape case and people not believing in how you handle that with victims, so forth and so on. Because I think in our early episodes, we talked about like a rape at a party. I can't remember where it happened, but it was a sports team and they had raped a girl and it went national. They tried to cover it up, you know, all that stuff. And you got to see them attack the victim and people didn't really want to listen to her and blah, 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 blah. And having them do a male rape, it kind of like seeing a male go through having to have the rape kit, you know, done on him and being talked through that. Or even how you're questioned by the police and it's like, well, that couldn't have possibly have happened because it's a boy. I think that was one of the things that Regina King said. Well, he's a boy. That just doesn't happen.
And then let's not forget the whole social media aspect of it. Because it wouldn't have. The boy didn't remember really what happened. He knew something happened, but the picture started going around. His girlfriend tells his mom, and his mom is the one really pushing it. And I understand, like, from a parental perspective, maybe you certainly do want the best for your kids, and you want anybody who harms them to, you know, feel some retribution. But
she's doing the most.
She's
doing the most.
And there's, like I said, I know she cares, but she's playing that character so well that it makes you like, did something really happen to him? Like, if I only knew her, I'd be like, did something really happen to him, or is this bitch just crazy?
Because the thing is, I always feel like I'm watching the boy, and he doesn't remember what happened, and now we're finding out, like, spoiler alert, that, you know, the basketball teammate, they had been texting back and forth, and they even discussed sort of, like, rough sex or whatever, and it seems like the sex got super rough, and maybe he was drunk, and maybe he doesn't remember, you know, and he's like, that's not the sex I wanted, which is actually, you know, when you think about it from a female point of view, it's almost like, you know, situations that we hear playing out or whatever. But anyway, when his mom finds out, and the reason that she finds out is because once the pictures hit social media, because he's at a private school, they suspend him for inappropriate behavior. They don't touch the team at first. They just see that he's drunk and naked at a party, and they know what party it is. They know it's the captain's party, but they don't punish those boys at first. They punish him. And so that's how it all gets rolling, and mom is trying to get retribution for him, but he's like, I don't want this. This is not what I want. So it's so interesting because of all those different dynamics. So I actually try to stay up to watch it live. And that's what Trojan Scooter and I kind of live tweeted at the same time. So that's probably why.
And one more thing, though. The one guy on the team that is gay, he's having some type of non-sexual, maybe. Well, I don't know. Non-penetrating relationship with an adult. I still don't know who that adult is.
Yeah, me neither. The dude in the car.
Yeah.
It's a whole bunch too.
But it doesn't feel like a whole bunch when you're watching it.
Right. It's very well done. And I know you said touch on Regina King. Her character, she's in corporate. I thought she was a lawyer, but I don't think she is now. But anyway, you know, they're very well to do, but she's very hard. But then it's like the 18-year-old black boy, like he has a girlfriend and he's the one trying to have the girlfriend have sex. The girlfriend is telling him no. and he's trying to buy her expensive stuff or whatever, and his mom is like, you know these hoes trying to be on you because you're an athlete and all she wants you for is sex and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
She said that about the black girl. She didn't say that about the little Indian girl. They had.
Right, she wanted her to date, him to date a nice Indian girl that she approved of. It was just, it's a lot. And then to see Andre's character is like very balances her almost
her masculinity.
Yes, yes. Mm. Balances it out, but he's not feminine in it. It's just he's very low key, like just very well, until he found out that it was a guy. That's the other scene, was when he found out that it was the guy that got raped. He went across that table and yoked up his son. I mean, it was like excellent writing, excellent directing, excellent acting. So I'm a fan. They got me.
All right. That all sounds interesting. I might have to check it out myself.
Yeah, so that's how we feel about it, Trojan Scooter. So I'll catch you. Think it comes on Wednesdays. I'll catch you Wednesday at 10.
All right. Do we have any more feedback before I jump on?
Nope, that's
it. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, so that leads us into our main topic, and you know it's February. Woohoo! You know what that means.
Sales on cashmere sweaters?
That I got paid after not getting paid for like 6 months.
I know. Oh, I don't get paid until the end of February, so no. Ooh. But it means it's my birth month. Woo! Oh,
did you just?
You did. There's nothing we can do about it.
And because she's also the editor of this show, we can't even take it out.
Take none of my stuff out. Anyway, it's my birth month, but shout out to the Pisces in the house. It's not Pisces season yet, but it's on the way. It starts in February, so okay. But it's also American Heart Month. It also features a Hallmark holiday. You may have heard of it. Valentine's Day, anybody?
She said Hallmark holiday.
It's true. You know, they started lighting those shelves in December.
Right after Christmas.
They sure did.
They do like a Happy New Year baby with a champagne thing. They just went straight to hearts.
Straight to red and pink. But it's also Black History Month, and so those last couple of ideas come together in a nice way into the topic.
Wait, let me pause for a second.
Yes. Yes.
Valentine's Day is not the only made-up love holiday. There's one called Sweetie's Day that was made up by a candy company that I can't think of the name of right now. But anybody who's from Detroit or the like Ohio and stuff, there's a whole separate thing in October. That's all.
I've heard of that.
And then there's also Steak and Blowjob Day on the 14th of
March. Okay.
Made-up holiday.
Okay. Time out.
What, you can ring doorbells, but we can't throw in
our... Wait a minute, I know. Let me see what I need to... What sound effect do I need for y'all? Hold on. I'm going to find a good one. At any rate. So, Valentine's Day and Black History Month, you know, Love Day, basically, and Black History Month, they come together into a nice way into the topic of love in general and Black love specifically. So, I don't know if you all have seen it, but on the newsstands right now is the February issue of Ebony Magazine. And the cover story is Holding On to Black Love, and it's a beautiful cover. So anyway, they have a series of short essays looking at Black love from various perspectives, and I want us to talk about a couple of those perspectives, but I want to just start off kind of picking your brain about love in general.
Wait, before we do that, can we talk about how Ebony Magazine is looking like the Ebony that I grew up with? Like, this Ebony, like, this is the first time I've read Ebony in hell forever.
Me too.
It's so good. Like, it's so Black. It's so, like,
it's
unapologetically, it's excellence. It's everything. I'm like, oh, I'm subscribing. Like, yeah.
It's real Black, yeah.
It's awesome. Yes, so kudos. But anyway, all right.
It's kind of exciting. But, no, it's good. I'm going to actually pick on you, Sojo, because, you know, you launched your website, phenomenal, and in January you had a nice... Self-care is calendar, and I see that you launched the new one for February, really focusing on love and self-love. And so I kind of saw that you had a couple of nice questions in there about love, and I want to pick your brains to see what y'all think about a couple of those. So
One of the questions is, if love were a color, what color would it be?
That's a good one. Oddly, the color that came to my mind was yellow. I think it's just because, like, sunshine and, you know, it's like you can't ignore yellow, you can't ignore love.
You cannot ignore yellow, that's true.
So
For me, I think I don't have a specific color, but whatever it is, it's neon.
Oh wow.
It reminds me, remember when Bossy wrote, like, Fuck, Fear, Love Anyway? Mm-hmm. And she talked about rejecting that beige kind of love.
She did say that.
You know, whatever. And she said she wanted juke joint, speakeasy, like, you know, neon light-filled love. And so when I think of love as a color, I think of something neon, something bright, something vibrant. So that's my answer.
Those are interesting. Yeah, when I first thought about this question, the first thing I said, I was like, purple, because purple is awesome. Purple is the color of February. It's royal. It's pretty. It's all these things. But then I started thinking about, but I really love such and such a color. And sometimes when I'm in this mood, I love such and such a color. And I started to really think that I think that all colors are love. Like, you rainbow. Can't really, yeah. I was going to say rainbow, but I just think that every color is love. I don't think I could say, well, you're excluded. So if it's, you know, if this color, that's not love. I don't think I want to say that. Well, although I have to second guess that now that you reminded me about beige.
Well, that's why I put the question on a calendar, because everybody's perspective is so different when it comes to that, because everybody doesn't define love the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when you think about colors and what colors actually mean to people, like somebody could say, you know what, black is my color for love, and they don't necessarily mean, like, that's because I've had a whole lot of heartbreak and a whole lot of misery. I mean, they might be thinking of something that's strong. And I mean, you know, so when I asked that question on the calendar, it was really just to see what people thought.
Well, some people also could say beige is their color of love because it may represent stability, and that might be love to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah. So, y'all tell us what you think. What's your color?
Yeah, if love were a color, what would it be? Hit us up. Let us know.
All right. Mm-hmm. This is where everybody by now should be thinking of the Sade song.
Color of love.
No, don't do that. We're not going to do that to a Sade song.
Oh,
okay.
See?
Wow.
I did say was I didn't even sing it. I just said color of this.
You kind of sang it. But so anyway.
Okay. You know what? Y'all start trifling.
I got one more question from your calendar. And it is, what is the greatest lesson love taught you?
I wish you had given us, like, a heads, at least me, a heads up.
So well, even me, because I'm like, I put these questions out here, and I'm like,
you should be chomping at the bit with answers, Sojo.
Nope.
Okay, well, I'll go first while y'all thinking. Because I thought about this question from a few different perspectives, and, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is kind of romantic love, but I decided to not limit it to that and just think about however love came to me. So I thought about, you know, all kinds of different loving relationships, and I came up with three things, actually. Patience, perseverance, and acceptance. And I kind of talked about patience when we did our guest appearance on Two Guys, One Show, just about the fact that, you know, sometimes things in a loving relationship can take time, and patience has always been a lesson that I've always been in progress of learning, and acceptance is also a part of that as well, you know, not kind of trying to change your partner. But then I thought about perseverance, because I thought about my relationship with my mother and how, you know, at certain points it was not very positive or healthy, but she never closed the door on our relationship or on the potential of us to have a healthier relationship. So they just kind of really made me think about, you know, just the idea of never giving up, you know, in certain types of situations. And so that's where I got perseverance. So patience, perseverance, and acceptance are my three lessons.
I think for me with the lessons, the biggest lesson that I learned was that I'm still learning. Because I don't really have a clear-cut answer. It's always evolving. Like, the lesson that I learned at 12 is not, you know, necessarily the lesson that I learned at 40. So I think that if I were to say the biggest lesson that love has taught me is to remain open to learning what love is and defining it and redefining it as I evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my answer.
Remaining open. All right.
I would agree with what Sojo said, and I would also say flexibility, and I'll explain by saying for me, I love things and people and relationships, each one very differently. And I have also learned from love that other people, each person loves differently. And so while I may not see, they may not show me love in the way that I'm prepared to receive it, I have to take a moment and see how they show love, and then vice versa, how would they receive it so that, you know, that message is getting across. So flexibility in thought.
You know, it's interesting that you said that, because one of the days, I can't remember what day it is, but one of the questions is asking about your love language, because that's something that I only, I just had like a relationship therapy thing with some teenagers, some 16-year-olds, and actually brought up love languages, because, you know, when you're talking about how you express love and how that person, you know, would receive it, and what, and even if that person is showing you love in their love language, is that what you feel love is? And don't just close the door because they're not giving it to you in your love language. You have to understand that's the way that they perceive love. And then as a couple, and this is, it was so funny that the session was, not want to say session, but the conversation with the couple was so good, because they were like, ooh, you're right. Because I think the girl was like acts of service. And, you know, the dude was like, you know, I can't remember what the one is for, words of affirmation. And so it was interesting. Yeah, it was very interesting that he was very words of affirmation and she was very acts of service. And he wasn't understanding that when she was expecting some sort of act of service from him, and he's thinking, well, I'm telling you, you know, blah, 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 blah. But he's like, she never tells me, you know, that she cares about me. And I'm like, well, she's not, you know, an affirmation person. So it was like, once they understood that about each other, it was like a light bulb went off with them. And it was kind of cool to see them walk out, you know, and she was like, you know, you're pretty cool. I mean, she was trying to he's like, let me
you
carry
your
book
bag. After all.
Right. He's like, let me carry your book bag. I mean, it was like really cute, but to see teenagers, you know, even get that message, like, you know, that goes to what Smart was saying.
Well, I think it goes to acceptance too, because I mean, part of that is, you know, I don't have to change you to be able to truly see you. Yeah, like that was one of the things you were like. I forgot how you phrased it, but it was something like a synonym for love or fill in the blank about love or something. And I just really thought about how important it is, at least for me, to be seen as I am and to learn how to see other people as they are and to not, you know, necessarily judge that, but to see it and say, okay, now I see this is who you are. And so now we can make decisions from that. Mm-hmm. So it's nice that they can now see each other. So, you know, even though they can still work toward communicating in the same language, sometimes they can still accept, oh, I see you. I see what you mean or where you're coming from. I see your heart.
Right. And then be empowered to make decisions from there, as opposed to thinking that the other person doesn't care about them. Because it was obvious that they both cared about each other. It was just that they were communicating it differently. So.
All right. So we're talking about love, but I mean, we kind of talked up around it. Do we know, do we have a definition for what is love exactly?
I actually don't, because, again, I think for me it changes situationally. Like, you know, there are people that I love, and the basis of that love was that they are so much a part of who I am, and I love who I am today. And so a great example my mom was talking about certain people who would not be invited to my wedding. And I said, no, because those people, no matter how, you know, whatever, whatever, they helped me become who I am today. And I will love them for that. And there's nothing you can really do about that. and so that's, you know, that's in one area. But then, like, you know, romantically, you know, I'll love someone for, you know, in a totally different way.
Well, I think that, you know, that that saying that, you know, love is a verb, I really think it is. I think it's a, I think it's the doing, not just the feeling. I mean, you can feel a certain way. I think that's the affection or the emotion. But I think that to truly love involves effort and action. And so, and I'm, when I'm talking about love, I'm always thinking about it, not just romantically, but, you know, societally or with your friends, neighbors, at work, you know, just what does love look like? There was a quote from someone named M. Scott Peck, who Bell Hooks wrote about in her book. And he wrote, or she wrote, M. Scott wrote, "Love is as love does. Love is an act of will, namely both an intention and an action. Will also implies choice. We do not have to love. We choose to love." And it's, you know, kind of started making me think about, you know, the things that you can do or not do that is an act of love ongoing. So I don't know exactly what it is, but I think that it involves doing something.
You know, just, I don't know if Soto's still getting her situation together over there, but so, I don't know, well, you guys probably know, I tend to go, like, Sojo goes down rabbit holes of fuckery, I go down rabbit holes of science.
I'm here!
So, oh, okay, okay, I mean,
okay. Like, I didn't leave just because I'm
thinking. I can hear you!
Okay, okay.
I mean, no, go ahead. So, I go down rabbit holes of science. So, I have this thing where some people smell, like, I'm really sensitive to smell. Anyway, so I ended up down this whole rabbit hole of, like, testosterone, which ended, there was a curve, and it took me to the masculine behaviors versus the feminine behaviors and how, you know, all those hormones may or may not impact that. And I think going, it's a couple things. Going back to what you guys have talked about with the love languages, I now wonder if certain love languages are more masculine and more feminine, because I read something else that said, you know, women like to feel cherished, or the feminine likes to feel cherished, whereas the masculine likes to feel respected. And so, you know, it's, it would seem like maybe, what is it, words of affirmation might be more of a something that a masculine personality would see as love, whereas acts of service might be something that a more feminine person, and it doesn't mean like man or woman, just the feminine personality, might see as, you know, they might read that as love.
But you know what? I think they're masculine and feminine expressions of those love languages. Like, I think of I had an ex who, he was very acts of service. And so it was always my truck. Like, it was like your tires, your gas, your, you know, this, your that. It was always, you know, let me make sure that all of these things are taken care of. If there was something broken in the house, he was fixing it. You know, he would, you know, I mean, it was just, it was always very masculine acts of service. For, I could see the feminine part of that acts of service thing being something nurturing, like saying, okay, let me make sure that you have these meals prepared, you know, all these different times, or I'm packing your lunch every day when I'm going to work. Like, that's the feminine, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think there could be, and even with the words of affirmation, it could be like where you're talking about the males want to feel respected, whereas the woman might want to hear all the time, you're beautiful, I love you, I, you know, whatever, whatever. The guy might want to hear, you're powerful, or I really enjoyed the way you did X, Y, and Z, or you handled that, baby. I mean, you know. You know, so it could be like that. You could have masculine and feminine expressions, I think, of those different love languages. Because I think, like, even when I was talking about my student, when I said he was the words of affirmation, we both were like, I think, Buddha, you were like, oh, you know, and I was like, when he said that too, I was like, oh, but it wasn't that he was saying, you know, I need you to, like, oh, baby, blah, 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 blah. Right. He was saying that he wanted to feel like she, like he was special to her. So, yeah.
That's all interesting stuff. All right. So that leads us into then black love specifically. And then that's going to lead us into some of these things in Ebony. And I want to start off just with a little bit from Kierna Mayo's editor's letter. And she basically introduced the whole issue. But there was one section that I just want to read where she's talking about herself and love. And she says, "One day I'm going to write my novel. Then I'll be able to paint this picture about what one black woman has learned from and about love. And that fictional love will be free to be its raw and ugly, sweet and divine self, a kaleidoscope of experiences and dueling realities. It will take the form of beautiful people with too much going on, codependent entities like a filament and bulb. It'll be deep, deep, deep. Because that's what it is, black love. So confounding, so poetic, so metaphoric and true." And so she kind of, you know, paints this picture. But what do y'all have a definition or thoughts about what is black love before we kind of get into how they explore it in Ebony?
Okay, so when you initially asked or, you know, shared the question with us earlier today, it took me back to something I had read even earlier in the day because obviously I was sitting around today looking for things to do. so I think that when you add the qualifier black love, you're saying that it is demonstrated in ways that our culture would recognize. And so I thought back to when Cam Newton, because everything goes back to Cam and the black quarterback agenda, were to shout out to Rod and Karen. When Cam used grits and greens as part of his analogy.
So black, so beautiful.
That was so was black. And so this guy, Stephen Crockett Jr., had written in The Root that Cam was talking to us. So that's what I think of black love. It is something that within our culture we recognize, and we have not surrendered that definition to mainstream America. You know, like I don't know, jazz and rock and roll.
Okay, that's interesting. What do you think, Sojo?
I don't kind of want to spoil the Ebony, you know, the way they broke it down, but that's my definition of black love. Like I know I see a lot of times on social media, every time they have a couple, like Barack and Obama, black love.
Right.
You know, Jay-Z and Beyonce, black love. And I'm like, y'all, it's so much more than that. Like, it's not just about couples and relationships. And so I didn't know what it was going to be when I picked up the magazine, but I was so happy with how they broke it out into segments. So the segments are basically like my definition of blah, blah.
Okay. Well, so they have six essays in here, and they each look at black love from a different perspective. They have self-love, revolutionary love, gay love, maternal love, lesbian love, and time-tested love. And I definitely want us to talk about at least one and maybe two if we have time of these. And the one that really grabbed me first was the one by Michaela Angela Davis, Feeling Myself. And it's about self-love. And so in this piece, she's talking about her daughter, or when her daughter was seven, and she, you know, went to a Bible school lesson and heard, you know, in the Bible it says you should love your neighbor like yourself. That means you have to love yourself first, right, mommy? And so she was really excited that her daughter kind of got this fundamental truth or this fundamental idea. But then she was like, she was worried, Michaela was worried that now she'd have to teach her how to do that. And she wasn't really sure if she could. So she wrote, "If I could have predicted that moment, I never would have wasted so much of my young adulthood abusing myself by silently repeating how unworthy fat or fake I was. I would have addressed what made me feel ugly, undeserving, invisible, or disposable, things so many of us struggle with, despite how fly we may appear. How could I love my life like it was golden? How could I raise a black girl who loved and worshipped her sacred self if I hadn't figured it out for myself?" And she goes on to say some of the things she did, but before we get to how she decided to model black love, I want to know, did you have that experience as the younger you where you treated yourself in a less than loving way?
Yeah, I did. I did, and I didn't know why, because I was so angry. Because you guys know I grew up in an abusive household, and I had so much anger and resentment. There was anger and resentment towards my dad, and then there was underlying resentment towards my mom that I didn't realize that I had until I was an adult. And so that caused me to act out in a lot of ways. Like, I started drinking when I was 10. You know, I was just... I did a lot of self-destructive behaviors, but not realizing at the time that they were self-destructive. And so when you asked, did you ever treat yourself in a less than loving way? Absolutely. And then I also the other day found this quote on Instagram from Alex L. where it says, it says, when I understood and began to honor that forgiveness does not mean reentry, I was able to find peace. And so for me, forgiveness was a forgiveness, not just towards my parents, but also for myself, for internalizing that anger and resentment. Like, that was the beginning of me starting to actively, and I guess what they say, radically practice self-love.
Yeah, I don't necessarily feel I've ever felt that way. I mean, as I've said before on the show, I've been more delusional than anything. No, seriously. Like, I mean, this probably stems from, you know, being an only child for most of my life. Actually, yeah, for pretty much all of my childhood, and being the most valuable thing, and yada, 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 that I wasn't necessarily prepared that the rest of the world didn't see that. And didn't understand why they didn't see it. Like, what's wrong with y'all?
Well, I, you know, when I first read this part, I couldn't, you know, I didn't say that I abused myself. Like, I didn't have negative self-talk like that. You know, you're fat or fake or anything like that. But I did have insecurities, you know, being really shy and kind of, you know, not really feeling like I could compete, even though deep down I knew that I could, but some kind of way I just didn't feel brave enough to do it. And I think that kind of led me to make some really poor choices and stay in a really unhealthy relationship, romantic relationship, for a long time at a young age. So that's the closest thing I could think of was that.
You know, it's interesting that you say the negative self-talk or the insecurities, because I don't remember. Like, Smart, I was an only child. I was, you know, everything was really centered around me. But I don't remember ever being like, you're ugly, you're this, you're that. I thought I was cute. I thought I was, you know, fly or whatever. But I didn't realize that because I had built up a brick wall, I did not allow myself to feel much of anything. So it was like that was the negative, I don't know, self-talk, but it was like I wasn't allowing anything to penetrate me emotionally.
Well, that's what I realized was the case with me, but not until later. And then when I traced it back, I traced it back to my teenager years.
But again, I ask, is that a function of survival versus lack of self-love?
And see, that's what I struggle with. That's what I struggle with, because I think that I started those walls as a survival mechanism, but then when I didn't have to have that wall up, it just wasn't, you know.
It didn't serve you anymore at some point.
But it was your normal, I guess. And then the thing I'm trying to, I guess, get at is that just because you display certain behaviors, those behaviors may look the same on all three of us, but come from totally different places. So to say that, you know, you have that wall because you don't love yourself, no. I think that's a really an intellectually lazy way to quickly categorize people.
Well, I think that's when you make judgments of other people without learning who they are, or even attempting to see them from another perspective other than your own.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing she did say in the article that I like, that I'm actually learning to do now, because I used to suppress everything. Again, the wall, the this, you know, whatever. But she says, if someone hurt them, I learned to say that in real time. And so that's something that I've had to actively practice, too. And that's a part of the self-love thing, because even though it, as a child, it was a survival mechanism for me to not say anything, to just continue to go, I don't have to do that now. And I had to learn you don't have to do that anymore. If something happens, just be like, yo, you know. So anyway, I like that she talked about practicing radical self-care, because part of that is learning why you behave the way that you do. Mm-hmm. And is that a survival mechanism, or is it a lack of self-love? And then kind of going, you know, from there.
That second part, when she describes what some of her self-love practices, she said that I began to model my love for myself after the love I had for my darling daughter. I told myself encouraging, empowering, delightful things out loud. I fed myself wholesome, delicious meals regularly. I made sure I got plenty of rest and plenty of play. When I got cranky, I took an adult-sized time out, be it meditation or a walk. I allowed myself adventures and a space to be reflective and creative. I honored my imagination and tried not to take myself too seriously. And then she gets into the part that you were talking about. But that made me think about something that Tayari Jones posted on her Facebook a few months back. She asked, are you being a good parent to yourself? Especially that section about, you know, are you getting enough sleep? And that's what led me back to kind of think about that previous paragraph about what did I do when I was younger, because I definitely make those decisions now. Like 30 and 40 year old me will get plenty of rest and plenty of play, but in my 20s that just wasn't the way I thought about the world. So mm-hmm. You know, it says when I get cranky I take an adult sized time out via meditation. It wouldn't have really crossed my mind to take a time out or, you know, do something else. I just would have kept going. So.
And I think that's learning, like, who you are and what you need, too, because somebody else may read that and be like, but that doesn't do anything for mm-hmm. me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't need an extra nap to, you know, nurture myself. And then somebody else will be like, you know what? I need to carve out time to do that, because that's something that in the past I absolutely would not do. Mm-hmm. So part of self-love is reflecting, like mm-hmm. actually getting to the bottom of who you are at your core, not who you think you should be, mm-hmm. not who what somebody else tells you should be, but who you are and what you need for yourself.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any more thoughts about feeling myself, self-love, from either of y'all?
I don't think so.
All right, I think we got time to do one more. And one of the essays was about revolutionary love, and it was from millennial activist Dante Berry. There was a lot in here that I underlined and highlighted and kind of wrote in the margins, so I'm going to try not to say too much about it. But he really frames love this way. He says, the ability to love each other is our people's secret weapon in this war against the black body. And that is revolutionary. Revolutionary love is the ability to risk it all for the love of our people without ever expecting to see the fruits of that love. And later on, he talks about black love is an act of resistance in a system of white supremacist patriarchal culture that is determined to exploit and kill our people. Black love is revolutionary, or a revolutionary act, when we as black people are taught to hate ourselves. Mm. Any thoughts so far?
I wholeheartedly agree with what he said. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, again, we have to do it. We had to, at least in this country, do it in ways that our overseers and owners couldn't necessarily see. And I would take that back to our home countries, because Africa is a continent with many countries, and say that, you know, I think that some of our ways of loving each other probably have their roots in a lot of African traditions. Hmm. And we may, and you know, at this point we may not know them, because most of us don't know from which places we came, and then a lot of things, you know, a lot of wires get crossed as, you know, your people get love practices from other groups or tribes or whatever. So, yeah, I agree. You know, the idea that I take pride in acknowledging my black Detroitness is not
aggressively.
Aggressively is something that people, when they meet me, are often surprised about. Like, I have, you know, you have the opportunity to almost be considered one of us, and yet you still will remind us that, no, those my people down there rioting or having civil unrest, you know?
I like the movement is fueled by love, and this is why I really enjoyed the magazine so much in these essays, because they didn't just focus on the romance part of it. They talk about community, because that's what we need. And I feel like this year especially, well, I would say the last 2 years, that I have made more of an effort, like on my different websites or whatever, to promote positive black images, because, you know, to make sure that we see more of us being us, to, you know, kind of counteract what we're being told. And I'm also loving that, you know, with Black History Month or whatever, I'm seeing more people tweeting out, like, just the beauty of us. Like, in the last day or two, I've just seen so many things, like the City of Jewels on Twitter, like, she's been tweeting Afro-Cuban history under the tag Black Latinx History, which is so dope, because, you know, you usually think about, okay, you know, hey, it was, we were slaves and then we're free, and then the first, you know, black whoever and the first, you know, whatever. But everybody always forgets that we're black in so many different places. You know, so I actually am learning a lot from her tag just today alone. So it's just in seeing so many people just, you know, taking up the different tags and the BHM and the Black History tags and just going hard, you know, with all of our beauty and our history. I love it.
One thing, to go back to when you guys first started talking about Ebony, and I'll be up front, I was too lazy to walk downstairs and see if they had the magazine, is that things are now coming back around. It's in style to be unapologetically black.
Yes, Lord.
You know, so many, for so long, people, you know, our magazines, our hair, our way of being was so desperate to imitate what we thought white America was. White America is more Roseanne and way less the Cosbys. And so I think now we are seeing that, and it is becoming normalized.
Yeah. And I also like, they have a tag that Ebony's starting to promote, the We Did That tag. So it's like Black Facts You Should Know. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, so it's like things like that. Those are things, you know, it's not just, I know that we have so many things that are done to us as a community that we're always having to heal from and grieve our way through and, you know, all that stuff. But I feel like in the midst of all of that, that we still need to fortify our spirits by just celebrating who we are.
So. It's true. And Dante says a little bit about, you know, black love is how we stay safe, and that's how we build collective power for our communities. I like that. And he closed with, but we must always remember that black love is power, and black power builds the communities we need to remain safe. Safe to walk home, safe to eat Skittles, safe to wear a hoodie and play loud music at night, safe to exist. We are in a war with a country that never loved us, and love is our greatest weapon. So, and I, you know, love, beauty, creativity, all those things, promoting that.
One of my classmates, her tag is love is our superpower.
Yes.
It is. Yeah, I think that's beautiful. Yeah.
Can we talk about, let me go back to the how black Ebony is right now.
Ebony is real black right
the
now.
The official Black History Month quiz has three levels. Level one is black-ish, which these are all the answers that you really should already know. Then you have level two is semi-conscious, and then level three is super woke. Listen. I am loving this magazine. Like, I'm in. I'm all in with Ebony again. Like, I'm finna be like my mama in the 80s with, like, Ebony's.
Oh, Lord, a big Ebony's. Old basket full of Ebony's.
Right. Yeah, hold on. Okay. The Ebony's on the side in a basket, and then, like, six Ebony's spread out on the coffee table with the
y'all just
most
gonna say,
current month.
Fan going on.
Listen, y'all.
It's a lot of pretty brown people in this magazine, too, just flipping through the pages. There's some of everybody in here, from NeNe Leakes, Gabrielle, you know, Boris Kojo and Nicole. I mean, they're all, everybody's here.
And they all exist together. Look at there.
And they ended the magazine with Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee. Like, that's the last page from their archives, from the Ebony archives. So it's just, this magazine is bomb. Like, I mean, I'm all in with Ebony. They got me. I'm
Girl, hooked. Too bad we can't get Jet back.
Yeah, you just got to read it, you know, Ebony and Jet online. That's about it. But
yes.
All right. Well, I guess that's a good place to wind down. Unless y'all had any final thoughts about Black love.
I was going to say,
I was just saying, stay woke.
I'm hoping that young Cameron Jarrell Newton dabs on them on Sunday. I will be watching the game, but I will be probably like face deep in hot wings or something and miss all the real action. But yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree. I might actually check it out. I watch Super Bowl every now and again. So.
Oh, Beyonce is going to be on it with Coldplay. Have y'all seen that video?
I have not. I heard that they. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm uncomfortable with it, but we'll talk about that another time.
Okay. all right. So what about, this is our last call. Any cheers, Miss Smart?
No, I don't have any cheer. Well, actually, yeah, my cheers are to blackness.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So where can all of the blackness and everybody else find you?
Me on Twitter at think_P_smart.
All right. So, Joe?
My cheers actually goes to the cast and crew of Grease Live that came on Sunday, and it was a massive undertaking, and it was almost flawlessly executed. And I say almost because in the scene, if you're a Grease fan, Grease 1, if you're a Grease fan, the school dance scene when Cha-Cha comes and steals Danny from Sandy and does the little dance down the thing, they actually had a video mix-up where they skipped back to 20 minutes before and started playing Grease Lightning. Right, so I missed Cha-Cha, so I was so pissed. But it was amazing. Like, Vanessa Hudgens, she owned her role as Rizzo, and her father had just passed away hours before. And so while grieving, she rocked that freaking role. So, you know, it was great. But then I also want to say special shout-out to the black cast members, because y'all know Grease was set in the And ain't no black folk doing a school dance, you know, jitterbug with a bunch of white folk. It wasn't happening. But they actually had Kiki Palmer. They had Wendell Price played the coach. They had Hanifa Wood playing, what's the principal's secretary. But Kiki Palmer played Marty. I mean, they had, even for Beauty School Dropout, the special guest was Boys to Men doing the backup. It was great. And for them to have roles and them being black, and they weren't trying to like, you know, not be black. Oh, they were black, but it was not a thing. And so, you know, it was like just seeing them be pink ladies and, you know, and the T-Birds, and they just fit. It was just all fantastic. So cheers.
What did you say after, between Kiki Palmer and Wendell Pierce? There was somebody else you said?
Hanifa Wood.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so it was just all fantastic. So I just wanted to give cheers to them. And you guys can find me on Twitter at SojoXOXO. That's SojoXOXO. You guys can also see my February Love Is calendar on that Twitter account, but you can also find it on my website, which is phenomenal.com. And that's PHYINOMENAL.com. That's it.
All right. And I want to give cheers to Professor Blair Kelly. She is awesome. She is a dean, a professor, a historian, a cultural critic, and I love the way she takes history, specifically the black historical movements, and brings them into the present and makes it accessible for everyone to understand. She does that on air. She does that on Twitter. She now writes articles and posts, you know, all around the internet. So you can find her work, but I just really love the way that if there's some misunderstandings that people have, she will nicely go on and explain the truth and contextualize the truth for you. And so, you know, she's literally a keeper of black history and bringing it into the present. So y'all look for Blair Kelly on Twitter.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Does she still do the podcast with Twib?
She does. I saw her tweet about it recently, but I haven't listened to it just because I don't have that app. But.
Yeah, it must be on the paid side because it's not on Stitcher. It used to be on Stitcher, and I would listen
to it. It used to be on Stitcher, and I loved listening to it, and I was sad when I realized it wasn't on Stitcher anymore. Yeah. So, yeah, they're not giving their content to the people. They're giving it to our people. So you got to go directly to, you know, This Week in Blackness to get it.
But you can catch me on Twitter at NDCHARP. That's NDC Harp, like the instrument. And I realized that my website is down, but whenever it comes back up again, it's going to be cocostudio.com. That's C-O-C-O Studio, cocostudio.com. And you can find all of us on Twitter, Facebook, Stitcher, iTunes, Podomatic, TuneIn Radio, and WhiskeyWineAndMoonshine.com. So just kind of Google Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine, and you'll find us in all those places. Don't forget to leave us feedback or a 5-star review. And remember, sharing is caring. If you like what you heard, don't keep it to yourself. So with that, we'll wrap it up, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine. Cheers.
Cheers.
You're just too good to be true. Take my eyes off of you. You be like heaven to touch.